Tonight we're talking about the words that we use. Now, for those of you who've been around the village for a while, you've heard this talk at some level. You've heard us talk about the words that we use and how they can impact us and all that kind of stuff. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all the places that words are talked about in Proverbs. When preparing for a sermon that you kind of already know by heart, it's a little frustrating. So I thought tonight I would just allow it to be a rant. Emily McConnell once told me that the rant was the new sermon. So I am in the line of Emily McConnell in that I'm going to rant tonight. It's the new sermon. So I don't know if I'll follow any linear kind of direction. Recently, I've been listening to my sermons. Now, one of the things that I have been telling this pastor that I consult for is that you have to listen to yourself. You have to listen to yourself talk because you'll find out that you're boring and that you're making everybody else listen to you. And so once you get over listening to you talk, which is difficult, I don't know how many of you have ever done a talk and then had to listen to yourself. It's a little like, oh, you're like, oh my gosh, how many times are you going to say that? It's like, gee whiz, you're boring. So recently I was practicing this discipline of listening to myself, and I listened to 5 sermons straight. And I realized that there's a particular set of theology that I like to speak all the time, and I put it in my sermons. And I was telling Susan that I always talk about this particular idea all the time, and I think I should stop. And she said, well, no, because people are hard-headed and they don't remember. Anyway, so they need to hear it again, and I need to hear it again, and it helps me construct things better. So let me, before we get into talking about words, we need to know, why is it even important for us to be nice to each other, to talk nicely to each other? What's the point? What's the point in all these verses about the way we use words? So if we start in the beginning, and these verses aren't on your sheet there, but we start in the beginning in Genesis. Genesis is the first book. And in the first chapter, we have God saying something very interesting. And so here's the part where I say this all the time. We have to go back to the beginning, and we have to talk about what God says to himself. He says, let's create man in our own image. This is hugely important. And tonight, basically, what we're talking about is what the village is all about. Everything else that the village does is not important. What we talk about tonight is what the core of this church is about. So if you forget all other 50-some-odd sermons, remember this one, or at least remember some of the main points, because this is what we're about. The first thing we're about is that you're created in God's image. It's hugely important. It's hugely important. It is what gives you value. God, it's what gives you dignity. To be created in God's image is what gives you value and dignity. It's why you would offer anything good to anyone else. But what happened in that construct with Adam and Eve being created in God's image is that they ran into Satan. They chose to sin by doing something he asked them not to do. And they end up in this scene where God is looking for them, and they're hiding, which is kind of funny, you know, trying to hide from God behind a tree. You know, it's like, anyway, thank you. Adam, you know, God's calling for Adam. He's like, Adam, Adam, where are you? And finally Adam, you know, he finds Adam, and Adam, he's like, why are you hiding, basically? And Adam says, well, I'm afraid because I'm naked, so I hid. That's what we did. And so that is our mode of operation. All of us are afraid, and all of us realize that we're naked, that there's something wrong, something happened to the image, and so we're all hiding. And we spend most of our life living that way, living in fear and trying to hide our nakedness, trying to hide being exposed. Because in Proverbs 12, 25a says, an anxious heart weighs a man down. Most of us are weighed down people. Yeah, sometimes we're happy, but most of us have an anxiety inside us. Most of us are weighed down. Most of us are afraid. Now, if we just leave it right there, we all might as well just go jump off a cliff, and I'll be the first to do that. But last week, when Hannah was talking about Scripture, she talked about Galatians 2:20. And she talked about how Paul says, and now I knew I'd blank it because I didn't have it written down. Who has it memorized? Galatians 2:20. I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And that's the important part of this, and that is the whole gospel in a little tiny nutshell. It's that the way that our identity, our image, is restored is because we now hold on to Christ's image. So you and I are now in, and here's a nice theological term, we're now in the inbreaking of the kingdom. When Jesus came and died on the cross and rose from the dead, he brought the kingdom here. He says the kingdom is near, it's all around you. You need to repent and believe. So you and I are now, if you're a follower of Jesus, in the process of having our image restored. And we're in the process of restoring one another's image, and we're in the process of restoring the world. That's what the gospel is. It's that we're to go out and participate with God in what he's doing. Now, are we going to get it completed? And if we work really hard, it's going to come faster? Who knows? But it does need Jesus in the end to finish it. But right now, we're in this in-between time when we're working with God to restore things that are broken. That's what the village, in a nutshell, is all about. But tonight, before we get into what it might look like to help restore one another's images in a very simple and very practical way, I want to talk about my favorite verse. And all of you know it, and all of you, well, most of you do, I won't say all of you. But Hebrews 10:24-25 is my favorite verse. In fact, it is the verse that the village is based on. It's why we do what we do. And it starts out with, and let us consider one another. Let us consider. I think that let us consider is a lost art in our culture. Most of us, all of us, don't know how to think about anybody but ourselves. We are so focused on our internal emotional experience of life. In fact, all of us have emotional meters, and it's either things are down and I have anxiety about it, or things are bad and oh, there's just a moment of joy, or at least I'm doing something that's kind of making that feeling inside a little bit number. And so we're so obsessed with that that we don't take time to consider other people. I don't take time to consider other people. It is very difficult. In fact, recently in my life, I'm realizing more and more, especially with kids and with a community house, both work hard on this, that like I really am gauged on how I feel at the moment. Do I really want to get down on my hands and knees and look at a kid in the eye and engage him, or do I just want to push him aside and move somewhere else? Because I don't want to inconvenience myself, because that doesn't feel good. And that's just on the smaller level. Most of us struggle with thinking about other people. So one of the major disciplines at the village, if you didn't know this, is the practice of considering other people. And so I have an assignment for you, and I am going to attempt to ask you this every week. And if you meet with me or I see you in my house, I may ask you this too. And that is, what I want you to do is I want you to get a hold of a village list of people. All the kids and all of the adults, there's probably about 70 people, and I want you to write them all down with a 2-inch space under their name. And I want you to take 5 or 10 minutes a day and just start scribbling notes about those people underneath their name. So I want you to say, Blanca. And I want you to write, what do I think Blanca needs? What can I offer Blanca? What should people in the church be offering Blanca? What things might Blanca need to work on? It's all about Blanca, by the way. So start with Blanca. Now, I want, you know what? You'll find this very hard. Okay, what does Blanca need? What can I offer Blanca? What might Blanca need to work on? You don't need to set up a plan on how she's going to do it. And what I want you to do while you're doing that is I want you to open your Bible. Because here's the reason why we and I don't consider people is because we don't read our Bible. If we read our Bible, we would think about other people. Because that is what the whole Bible is about. The Bible constantly is saying, it's not about you, it's not about you, it's not about you, it's not about you. And we keep saying, yes it is, yes it is, yes it is. Now, what's interesting is, if you want to look, write down on your list, you can write down how you might spur each one of the people in this church onto love and good deeds. And spur, the best way to think about it is, how can you irritate people? How can you irritate people towards love and good deeds? How can you be that person who's gently and kindly and constantly moving people in the community towards God? Now, one way that you might learn do good to spur someone on to love and good deeds is simply pray good things into their life. That will irritate them. I guarantee it. And I think what's really cool is you'll start seeing your heart changing to people. You'll start seeing yourself in this discipline of, oh, yeah, Larry, yeah, I gotta talk to him about that. If you're looking at it every day, then you're thinking about other people. Now, what I would like to suggest for those of you who are married is I want you to first start with your husband or your wife. And I want you to give it like a page and not 2 inches. And I just want you to write down ways that you can offer yourself and offer good things to them and what they need, and really just analyze them and think about them. And then the last part of 24 or 25 is that we should not give up meeting together, and more as we see the day coming. And that's the key is to not stop meeting together. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean Sunday, though. Sunday will give you the broadest picture of the community and people. But what it means is don't stop meeting with each other, because if you stop meeting, then your analysis of each other is kind of not that good, because you're not able to really come up with anything good because you never see them, and so you don't know what's going on in their life. You don't have an opportunity to hear them. So, if you forget everything I say from this point on, remember this assignment. Everybody in the village, 2 inches, their name on a piece of paper, you're going to begin to think about them and write things down about them. The rest of it is not that important. So what we want to talk about today is, if we're going to be in the process of helping restore one another's image, if we're going to be in the process of offering one another dignity because we reflect the image of God, then there's a tool that we've been given. It's communication, and it is how we kill each other and how we bring each other to life. It is how we destroy one another and how we help one another. But before we get to kind of the life of words and the death of words, let's just talk about the general conversation. I was at Borders working on this sermon, and there were two young women who came in, and they sat down, and this is sort of their conversation. Hey, how are you doing? Good, good, good. How are you doing? And they said, how are you doing? Good. How are you doing? Good. How are you doing? Good. 5 times. I counted it. And then what was kind of buffering the how are you doing? Good was some explanation about how the baby was with somebody else and it was coming soon. But most of the conversation was, they just kept repeating the, how are you? Good. None of them said, well, what's good? And I think a lot of time our conversations are rather shallow. In fact, as Christians, I think if you see a lot of, if you are interested and you start looking at statistics about Christians, you find out that we're like ranked in the bottom 5 of people that, you know, people want to be friends with, you know, and we usually end up with murderers and rapists and you know, some of that is for a good reason because we speak truth, but the other part is a bad reason, because as in Jeremiah 6:14 says, in Jeremiah talking about the priests of his time, who we are, the priests of our time, they dress the wounds of my people as though it were not serious. Peace, peace, they say, when there is no peace. You and I have been given the commission to bring Jesus and to bring peace. And I think most often what Christianity, at least the public Christianity, what we see on TV, what we hear from our neighbors, are books that tell us, you know, how to get everything fixed, how to get it all done, you know, how to deal with your husband, how to deal with your kids, and there's all these steps. And there's these bright, shiny preachers who are really charismatic and jump up and down, and they get us excited, then we don't do anything. And so it feels like we're saying to a lot of people who have pain, oh, here, let me just quick give you a cough drop for that arm that was just cut off. You'll be all right. Don't worry. And I think, you know, as villagers, we're a little cynical and we're a little arrogant and we're a little like, yeah, well, we wouldn't do that because, you know, well, we think about each other and we think about the world. But you know what? I'm guilty of that. We're all guilty of that. And it's not just our brothers and sisters who do that. We do that. Sometimes we want to just give people easy solutions, and sometimes we just don't talk about anything of any seriousness. We don't ask any hard questions. We don't act interested. So let's talk about the words that we can use. What I'd like to do for you is just read a bunch of Proverbs, and you can follow along in your paper. Because I think if we dissect each one, A, it would get long and boring, and B, you just don't hear the power of all of these Proverbs, and really just think about what is Solomon saying. So the second part of 12:25, I'll just read the whole thing, but I read it to you already. It says, "An anxious heart wears down a man down, but a kind word cheers him up." And Proverbs 15:1-4 says, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise man commends knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good. The tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. The tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat of its fruit." Proverbs 25, it says, "A word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver, like one who takes away a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar poured on soda is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. Like cold water to the weary soul is good news from a distant land." What's that? Yeah, apparently it has some soda forms. The words we use either have the power to kill somebody or they have the power to give somebody life. Let me give you a really good example and embarrass Ryan more. For those of you who don't know, and here I'll just expose him, he's been gone for 6 weeks. And he's been gone for 6 weeks because he went to see his girlfriend in California. And here's the deal. His girlfriend, you know, there's a chance that she might actually like him enough to come down here and live and get to know you guys in September. Now, that may not happen, but it's a possibility. So if she does come down, you guys need to make her feel really comfortable, okay? Because, you know, Ryan, we're his only hope, his only chance. She's a really lovely lady, and she came down. Her name is Teresa, and she came down sometime in, when? December, October? When was that? December. And in December, like in the summer, the village empties out. And people are gone doing their thing, or they just don't want to go to church, or whatever it is. But anyway, it was on a Sunday night. She had come to church, and it's one of those nights when maybe there was 20 of us, if we counted all the babies and the kids. And Rod was preaching, and through the whole sermon, we got to understand, anyway, with men, identity comes out of our work. Now, some of us don't like that, and we try really hard for it not to, but our identity at some level comes out of what we do and what we do in the world. And, you know, some of us Gen Xers would like to not have that, and so we try to a different identity, but work is our identity. And so you guys are my identity. And sometimes I get wrapped up in the idea of how many people, how many of you show up, how good Rod is preaching or bad he's preaching, how good the band sounds, how angry I'm at you, how much pain and struggling is going on in our church. Whatever, it's a broad spectrum of how I feel about myself. Well, let me just tell you that at that evening, I wasn't feeling very good. And I was annoyed at Rod for his sermon for some reason. And I was sitting way in the back, and the room used to be flipped around. And so I was sitting back here, standing, and I was just saying, God, I just don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be a pastor. Which, by the way, I read some statistics that say 80% of pastors don't want to be pastors. That's a weird statistic. But anyway, I guess I'm in good company. But I was sitting there just saying, I don't want to do this. Maybe I'm just not cut out for this. Maybe, I just am not very charismatic, and, maybe I'm not missional enough, and maybe I just don't get this, and maybe these people don't get this. And so I'm just thinking, and I'm asking God, okay, I just need to be okay with this. And so I'm kind of staring up in this space like this, and then I look down, and Carissa is kind of short. Well, I'm tall, so she's short. And I look down, and she's staring at me. And I don't even know this girl. I went out to a dinner at a Beeline with her and Ryan and my wife, and my wife got really sick, and so we had to leave, and so I didn't even really know her very well, and she's staring at me, and I'm like, well, okay. Normally people in the church, when they stand next to me during service and staring, they want something. So I'll ask, what do you want? So I said, what do you want? And she said, well, I have something, I need to tell you something. And it's kind of weird. I don't know what to say, how to say this, but she's like, I just want to let you know that God is really here, and he told me to come over here and tell you that he's proud of you. Right? And I was like, oh. And Ryan says she probably doesn't even remember saying it. Maybe she went into a trance or something. But anyway, I wouldn't have believed any of you. In fact, if you all had gotten up out of your chairs and come over and surrounded me and said, God's really proud of you, I said, well, you're all full of it. But not because I'm not saying I don't trust you, but I think you all know me well enough that you would want me to help me, and you'd use good life words to speak into my life. But I didn't know her, and so I instantly believed her. But that's just my own issue that I want to put out there. What was important about that is that those words had power for life. They were transforming. In fact, I hung on to them I still do. I'm like, every time things are going down, I'm like, oh God, you said you were proud of me. I don't know what that means, but I know that it's good. It was two words that I hung on. The words that you use can transform people's lives. But the thing is, most of us are really careless. We're really careless with our words. And it's particularly if we're men, we're all so caught up in our anger that we're trying so hard to push it down that it sort of comes out on the edges of a lot of our language. And you don't know the kind of impact that has on someone. I've met this guy named Gary. He's a really cool guy. He fixed our piano for $150 instead of making us buy a new one. And everybody I talked to said, oh, that piano is like 15 years old and they went out of business and nobody fixes them. And da, da, da. But Gary fixes them, and Gary fixes guitars. And Gary used to be a high-powered executive in an electronics company, and he got tired of everything, and now he repairs guitars. And he repaired Joel's guitar. But I was talking to him yesterday because I was bringing in Susan's guitar, and we were chatting, and he was talking about his son, well, his stepson, who's Samoan, and just a really good-looking man, boy, 19 or something like that. But he said he's always cowering in the corner, kind of, just doesn't realize he's good-looking, as this guy was saying, and that everybody'd want to be his friend. And then, he's like, well, he doesn't look like me. And he starts saying, I'm 50 pounds overweight, and da-da-da. He's chatting on. And I said to him, well, yeah, join the crowd. We're all 50 pounds overweight. But he didn't hear me say that. He heard, I don't know what he heard, but I watched the color just like, boom, drop out of his face. He was like, what? And then I repeated myself, and he was like, oh, okay. He heard, like my, whatever he heard, whatever those words were, and I don't know what they were, had the power to like just pull all the color out of his face. So whatever he heard touched on something, what, his anxiety and fear about himself. So the words that we use, even if we don't think it, can actually poke way into one another and touch on the fear. And you have the power to either crush it or to push it away and speak truth to it. It says that a word aptly spoken. Here's where considering comes in. And this is, I can't give you any formulas on how to speak good words to someone because I think all of you know how to do it. The thing is, it takes two disciplines. One is considering people. And the other is self-analyzation, self-introspection. See, most of us, we all are introspective. We're into our, like, internal emotional thing, or the fact that somebody's irritating us and it makes us emotionally uncomfortable. But we're not usually thinking about, okay, how am I really feeling right now? Because most of us, when I say most of you are afraid, you know, some of you will say, oh yeah, I am afraid. But most of you will be like, what? I'm not afraid. If you're going to speak truth to other people, then you're going to have to be aware that you're afraid. You're going to have to be able to say, I am afraid because. And here's the way you can learn what you're afraid of in a real simple way. Think about a time when somebody has spoken into your life in a painful way. A lot of us have these sentences that other people have told us. We hold on to them, we treasure them, we stoke them, we burn incense to them, because they say something about who we are. And that will give you the clue to what you're afraid to be exposed, but what you're really afraid of. So, what I'm going to do, because we got plenty of time today, is that I'm going to tell you what's most important for you to remember, and then I'm going to break you guys up into groups. And if you don't know everyone, just jump in and tell your name, or somebody at the village take control of that group and say, hey, who are you? Well, what I want you to do is just first start out with times in your life when people have said things that you, like Carissa said to me, that transformed who you were. Preferably the shorter the better, not paragraphs that people offered you. But just those words where somebody just said something and it transformed the way you think about yourself. And then the harder part, let's talk a little bit about things that people have said to us that have just crushed us, that have just drained all of the color out of our bodies. And the only thing we could think of is, I gotta get out of here. Just get me out. I don't want to be in this place. This is way too uncomfortable. So let me tell you what you need to remember, and then we're going to break up in groups. First is, you need to remember the assignment. I want you to do the assignment. I will ask you. I promise. Have you done it? Yes. You can put the list in the bathroom. If you're a mom, that's a good place to hide. Shut the door and you got 5 minutes. You didn't even have to go to the bathroom. Just sit on the toilet. 5 minutes. It's not very long, really. You guys have that time. The second thing is, I want you to wrestle with this, and I want you to admit to God that you really are selfish and that it has a dramatic impact on other people. I just want you to hear yourself say that. I want you to go to your mirror, and I want you to look at it, and I want you to say, I'm selfish, and it has an impact on other people. And then I want you to ask God, okay, I know I'm selfish because Eric told me. Now, would you please show me how that's happening? And that's all that you really need to remember, because, you know, the word thing is important, but we're going to discuss that right now. So, if you would break up into groups, 4 or 5, we've got about 10 minutes, and we're just going to talk. So whoever is bold and courageous, take the lead, and give everybody a chance to talk. Right, just turn your chairs around. It's not too hard. You can do it. For the sake of the kid workers, I do have to. Those who are watching our children, I must move us on. So, I think that just in closing, it's a good thing, A, to remember that the words you use are like swords, they're like weapons. And to remember that the people you're talking to bear the image of God. And that when we speak harshly, we're defaming the image of God. And not just, as Joel pointed out to me, not just the other person that we're talking towards, but ourselves. We're defaming our own image that we bear of God. So, with that thought, let's just close in prayer. Dear God, I thank you for this group. I thank you for the way they've spoken into my life. I confess that probably many times I've said things, even up front, that hurt people or are painful for, and probably inappropriate. So I ask for your forgiveness and theirs. And Lord, I just ask that you would be with us and amongst us as we sing and take communion and worship you. Amen. A couple things to do. One is offering. You're kind of jumbled, so I will just pass it around. If you're visiting, we're just happy to have you with us. So you just pass that back. That'd be good. The other way is communion. We have bread and juice in the back, in both corners. And we just ask, and with this particular thing that we do, communion, that if you can't say you're a follower of Jesus, that you not take it. But if you can say that you're a follower of Jesus and that you stand with him in his broken body and his blood poured out for you, then you can go and break some bread off and put that in the juice, or go up with your family or with your friends and offer each other communion. There's also the sinner's chair back there. It's just a chair that you can sit in if you need prayer or you're feeling oppressed by other people's words, sin against you, or your own sin. And people will come and surround you and pray for you. And we're also going to sing and spend some time just listening. So let us do that together.